Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Christian nationalism has become an umbrella term for people who agree that there should be no separation between church and state as long as that church is their own certain variant of Christianity. They want their religion to rule the nation and set the standards of behavior, sexuality, and more. The Christian right has become a major part of the Republican Party's base, which is why abortion is now banned in Texas. And if Donald Trump wins back the presidency, Christian nationalism could again have a free pass into the Oval Office and decide who will be appointed federal judges and to the Supreme Court. So what do we need to know about Christian nationalism and its connections to Donald Trump? We're joined by Catherine Stewart, the author of the book Power Worshippers Inside the Dangerous Rise of Religious Nationalism, and the book was the basis for the documentary God and Country, which was produced by Rob Reiner. And Catherine, welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be in conversation with you.
Yeah, this is an important topic at an important time. That's like right now, today. Donald Trump is on trial for paying off a porn star to keep quiet about their affair. It's a baffling pairing, evangelicals and Donald Trump, evangelicals who typically adhere to a literal reading of the Bible. They theoretically follow a strict code that opposes infidelity, immorality, and abortion. They're opposed to same-sex marriages. Why this strange matchup? How do they connect Donald Trump and Christian nationalism evangelicals?
Well, we need to get out of our heads the idea that Trump's base are going to really see any kind of problem with something, with somebody so transparently immoral and criminal as their representative. The rank and file have really been targeted by the disinformation machine that's part of the Christian nationalist movement, and it's very much based on identity. So there's nothing we can do really to shake their convictions that he's fundamentally on their side, and that's all that matters. In a way, they often see him almost as a religious figure, you know, really, it's about virtue signaling and identity. He practices a form of identity politics. I mean, they'll come up with all kinds of rationalizations. They'll call him a King Cyrus figure, an imperfect vessel that God chose to enact his will. But really, it's just a rationalization. You know, I think when we use terms like Christian nationalism or religious nationalism, we can't help but suggest there's something religious about it. But the motivations are really just political and to some degree psychological. Religion is a cover. So it's the exploitation of religion for political purposes, but it's really a form of identity politics.
Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can send us an email to thesource at tpr.org. Text us at that call and number if you got a question or comment about Christian nationalism. Love to hear from you. Let's go to a caller right now. We do have Rose on the line. And Rose, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I grew up here in San Antonio as a black woman, black person in San Antonio. The only thing we could do was go to church. I had the chance, so that was our everything, our recreation, our everything, our social everything. I had the chance in 2015 to stop work and take care of my father. Now, a lot of black folks watch that 700 Club, those Christian channels. So I had a chance to witness Pat Robertson and that whole crew spit vitriol about the very physical appearance of Michelle Obama and Barack Obama, as though that had something to do with their God-given being creatures. And, you know, that's just not Christian. I didn't hear anything Christian about that. And then you had Pastor Hagee, that pastor up in Dallas, First Baptist Church or whatever, from the pulpit support Donald Trump and all that nonsense makes you wonder what's really a Christian about any of that national Christian movement.
Rose, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate that. So, Catherine Stewart, you can talk about that there is a media machine behind this movement. Can you, and on the radio and on TV and other ways, what's happening there?
Well, the movement, I think of it as a mindset and also a machine. On the, you know, on, for the mindset, there's this idea that there's a right religion in America and a wrong religion. America's founded as a so-called Christian nation, and our laws should be based on a very reactionary interpretation of the Bible. And by the way, I want to thank you so much, Rose, for that, for calling in, because a lot of this identity is about race. It's the movement really got its start in an earlier era in our country around issues of segregation and pluralism, and racism is really baked into its core. But in terms of the machine, you know, this is a movement that has invested for over five decades in a deep, you know, a number of organizations that we can group into categories. You have a large messaging or media infrastructure. You have right-wing policy groups, legal advocacy organizations that function to promote justices with the supposedly correct views onto the courts. And that's how we're getting a lot of the bad decisions that are very unpopular decisions that we're seeing today. There's a very sophisticated data initiative. So it's that combination of the mindset and the machine that gives this movement its political power. And I do want to point out that there is a leadership-driven movement. The agenda is not driven by the rank and file. It's the leaders of the organizations often receiving a lot of money from these extremely rich donors. And when it comes to the readers, they really like Trump because he gave them everything they wanted. He gave them unprecedented power, political access to public money. You know, they're getting a lot of money for their initiatives, the taxpayer money, like religious schools and things like that. They got the judges they want. They get policies that privilege their wealthy donors and the forms of religion that they want to privilege. They get sort of, I would say, hard right economic policies that actually make it harder, not easier, for so many American families to succeed. So they'll put up with the rape and the criminality and the vulgarity and all of that because they're getting so much in return.
And just real quick, I would see white Christian nationalism interchangeable with Christian nationalism. So should it be white Christian nationalism? Is that fair?
Well, I use the term religious nationalism in the subtitle of my book, Inside the Dangerous Rise of Religious Nationalism, for two reasons. The first is to emphasize that this is a political movement. This is not this is not Christianity. It's not a religion. It's an anti-democratic ideology that exploits religion.
But there's white supremacy is baked into it.
Absolutely, and I delve into that in great detail in my book, The Power Worshippers.
Okay, we'll talk more about that when we come back from this break. And our phone line is open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we are talking about the book Power Worshippers, discussing Inside the Dangerous Rise of Religious Nationalism. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from La Fonda on Main, honoring the authentic cuisine of interior Mexico since 1932. Open for lunch, brunch, and dinner. More information at lafondaonmain.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, having a conversation with investigative journalist Catherine Stewart. She's the author of the book Power Worshippers, Inside the Dangerous Rise of Religious Nationalism. This is the book that was the basis for the recent Rob Reiner documentary, God and Country. If you want a question or a comment, call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Catherine, so there were other people on the stage of competing for the Republican nomination for president recently, including Mike Pence. Mike Pence, you say what you think about the guy, but it seems like he really was, he was part of the tribe. He was an evangelical person, but still, those voters chose Donald Trump over him. So can you kind of figure that out for me?
Sure. I mean, he promised religious right leaders everything that they wanted. He said he would appoint radical anti-abortion judges, and he did that. He repeatedly promised and boasted about overturning Roe versus Wade. I mean, he gave them everything they wanted. Now, would Mike Pence have done the same thing? Absolutely. But there's something about Trump that appeals to the authoritarian impulses of the leadership of this movement. Let's not forget, this is a radically anti-democratic movement. It rejects the principles of pluralism and justice and equality that represent the best of the American promise. So, you know, this is a movement where the leadership really doesn't want to sort of go within the bounds of our democratic political culture. They don't want to just be a seat at the table. They want to own the table. They want to dominate our culture. Some of them actually believe that Christians of a certain very reactionary sort should dominate what they call the seven mountains of culture, things like government, education, business, and things like that. So it's a radically anti-democratic movement. And he appeals to that authoritarian impulse because he doesn't behave like a normal politician. He's breaking the rules. He's breaking norms. And this is frankly what the movement wants to do.
There's a certain amount of irony when people say that Christian nationalism is the single biggest threat to American religious freedom. You would think that a religious movement would want religious freedom, but not so much. Can you explain that?
Absolutely. I mean, look, we can look at what religious nationalism does around the world. When you have leaders like Vladimir Putin in Russia, or Orban in Hungary, or Erdogan in Turkey, or leaders in Iran, when these leaders bind themselves very tightly to ultra-conservative religious figures in their own countries in order to consolidate a more authoritarian form of political power, we rightly recognize that as a form of religious nationalism. And this is what Trump has done when he goes to his rallies and he's got a preacher to his right and a preacher to his left as warm-up acts. Now, here's the thing. What these leaders are doing is they're bubble-wrapping themselves in sanctimony in order to guard against any democratic investigation of their corruption or cronyism. And they do it to, you know, divide their countries into those who are supposedly with us or those who are supposedly against us, the pure versus the impure. And they do it to consolidate their authoritarian forms of power. I mean, let's think about what, you know, Turkey has, what's happened to Turkey under Erdogan. He's arrested and jailed thousands of journalists, academics, and political opponents. Think about Russia's Putin. You know, it's sort of theocratic in a certain fake sense. That is, it's a regime that endorses a particular religion and attempts to impose those sort of patriarchal and homophobic values on society. But it's more accurately described as a cronyist kleptocracy with strong militaristic features and absolute suppression of political opposition and free speech.
But in the United States, we have freedom of religion, so it doesn't. Every religion should be treated equally. But if there is a Christian nationalism, then there would be, like, the belief is, you hear it all the time from these folks, that we were founded as a Christian nation. You can tell me if that's true or not, but if they do gain power and they decide this is going to be the official religion, then what about all the other religions? That's a loss of religious freedom, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we've already lost our freedoms in any number of ways. Think about the underage rape victims forced to endure pregnancy and childbirth, women denied best practices miscarriage care to save their lives and health. They're already living under theocratic rule. Women whose whose medical care is determined by lawmakers and far-right justices rather than best practices or rather than sort of the way, look, abortion care is overwhelmingly has overwhelming support amongst Republicans and Democrats in some form. And we're losing these rights. You're already seeing the consequences of this all across Texas, where women are having to endure miscarriages in emergency rooms because hospitals won't treat them and are having their care delayed until they become septic. I mean, this is just a start. But we have to remember that this is not just about the culture wars. This is not just about women's rights. It's about voting rights. It's about economic justice. It's about not having one version, one very reactionary version of one religion dominate over everyone else. I think it's really important to point out that some of the most powerful opponents of Christian nationalism are coming from those who are themselves Christian. I think about groups like Sojourners or the Baptist Joint Committee, Faithful America, Vote Common Good, the New Evangelicals, Faith in Public Life. There are so many of these organizations, and leaders and members of these groups are really upset about how their religion is being exploited for political gain.
Well, in 2023, in the last Texas legislative session, it very nearly passed. It was not just for, it was for a parliamentary maneuver that prevented it from passing, was a requirement that the Ten Commandments would be posted in every public school classroom in Texas. But when you say, well, and some people immediately might think, well, Ten Commandments, what could be wrong with that? But if you are part of a religion that's not, you know, doesn't have the Ten Commandments, or maybe you have a different Ten Commandments, they vary quite a bit, you know, the order and the phrasing. It suddenly, you know, there is an established religion when we have a law like that, don't we?
It is an establishment of religion. Look, the Christian nationalist movement is really focused on recruiting the young, often through these initiatives in public schools. They call the youngest group the 414 window. That's when children's religious identities are most likely to be formed. So they place all of these religious initiatives in public elementary schools and public high schools because they want to conflate in children's minds the idea of the state with the supposedly correct version of religion. So you get these youth-focused initiatives like Ten Commandments and In God We Trust stuff. You see it in groups like Good News Clubs, which established themselves in public elementary schools to convert children in their very earliest years of learning, to confuse in the minds of children the idea of the school and the state with one form of religion. But here's the other thing that it does. It really, you know, our society is incredibly pluralistic. Even within the Christian religion, there's incredible diversity in our society. So these types of initiatives are very divisive when they're in public schools, which are supposed to be non-sectarian, neither endorsing nor discrediting any form of religion. And that divisiveness is, in a way, by design, because one of the things the movement is very focused on is siphoning money away from the public school system and funneling it to religious schools that can teach, you know, creationism or contempt for people of other faiths or whatever, or charter networks that have a very strong...
Right, that's the school voucher fight that we're also now having in Texas.
Exactly. Or there are a lot of charter networks in Texas and elsewhere that are run by people with very sort of sharp right-wing ideological agendas.
Let me go to a caller. We have Brenda. And Brenda, you're on the air. Brenda, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Where is the separation of church and state? I mean, why isn't there a grassroots organization or somebody that sees this and has to separate the church from the state? And we're allowing these politicians and these organizations to really abuse this. And our founding fathers did not want this at all.
All right, Brenda, thank you for that call. Appreciate that. So, Catherine Stewart.
Yeah, thank you so much, Brenda. I appreciate that. There is actually an organization called Americans United for the Separation of Church and State that is working on these issues. They do a lot of, they run a lot of legal cases. They, you know, figure out when these violations have been are coming up, and they litigate when they can. And there are a lot of other organizations that are sort of chiming in as well. I mean, there are a lot of organizations working on this issue. The problem is that the religious right, you know, the Christian nationalist movement, has invested for over five decades in a very sophisticated legal ecosystem, I should say. So they've got a little bit of a head start, but groups like Americans United, the ACLU, and so many others are actually fighting back. And listen, most Americans, religious or non-religious alike, reject the politics of conquest and division that this movement represents. So we, broadly speaking, you know, do have the power. We really need to use it and act like it. So thank you for calling in.
Well, some of these new people on the Supreme Court seem to think that protecting religious, not so much freedom, but they want to protect Christianity, it seems like, on the Supreme Court. In Texas, we had the case of a praying football coach that went to the Supreme Court and they sided with him. There's a lot. They think that that needs to be protected, and that's the top of their agenda, it seems.
Yeah, it's interesting. They know very well that if you can pass a lot of very unpopular laws in society, if you can seize control of the courts. And that's why for such a long time there has been this incredible investment, an incredibly well-funded investment in this right-wing legal ecosphere. Leonard Leo is one of the movement's leaders. He was head of the Federalist Society for a long time. He's also known as sort of a money man of the religious right. There are unbelievable amounts of money in the system. I mean, think about the largest political donation coming from a guy named Barry Side. Actually, he's a Jewish billionaire from Chicago with no children. And he dedicated $1.6 billion to the Marble Freedom Trust, creating a sort of trust, and he put Leonard Leo in charge of it. Now, this is so much money that can generate over $200 million per year without touching the nut, without touching the principal. And all of that is devoted to right-wing politics. You know, a lot of these funders of the movement, they're not really motivated by religion as much as they are far-right economic positions that are going to further intensify the already extraordinary wealth they've already accumulated. They want policies that are going to make it harder for people to organize, make it harder for unions. A lot of them, like the DeVos family, also fund some union busting initiatives, even as they fund a lot of religious right initiatives. They want, you know, low taxes or no taxes for the rich, minimal regulation of the environment, and things like this. So I think that's one of the reasons why the movement is so incredibly well-funded. In a way, the culture wars are just the shiny baubles they dangle in front of the average voter, because it's a way to get people really interested in something and distracted.
Well, who knew that Milton Friedman wrote a book that's in the Bible? But, you know, we learn things all the time. I'm just kidding on that one. But anyway, so we're going to take a break. We'll come back. I got Juan on the board. Juan, I'll get you on the air when we come back. We'll continue our discussion about the Christian nationalists. What's their agenda? How do they get so powerful? They don't have a big majority. They don't have a majority at all in the American population, but they seem to punch above their weight. Why is that? And our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues right after this.
The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th, bringing together all sides with one important mission: protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a conversation with Catherine Stewart, investigative journalist, author of the book The Power Worshippers Inside the Dangerous Rise of Religious Nationalism. We invite you into the conversation. Got a question, a comment, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Juan on the phones. And Juan, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment on religious people. The religious people believe in Christianity, which is one God, which is Jesus, to give us his agenda, which is the Bible. And we should follow that and spread that word all over. And it should be for all the people in the world, all humanity, in order for the doors of heaven to open up after we die. And that, to me, seems like a totalitarian system. One God with an agenda that we have to follow.
Juan, thank you so much. I think you had a lot there. I appreciate you calling in. So, Catherine?
Well, thank you so much, Juan, for your for calling in. I'm an investigative journalist and not a theologian, but America is a very diverse country, and even within Christianity, Christianity is an incredibly diverse religion. So, this is definitely a movement that rejects a more social justice version of Christianity, and it also rejects the pluralism and, frankly, that our country was founded on, and the principles of the Enlightenment that so many of our founders endorsed.
But it seemed like Juan was making a point about the authoritarian nature of have you declared this is the one true religion and everyone better follow it or else. That seems to, line up very well with some other authoritarian, as you mentioned before, like Putin. That there's a reason why these things tend to coagulate.
Yeah, absolutely. Frankly, I think the crisis we face today is a crisis of American democracy. And specifically, in my view, it's a crisis of the Republican Party. I mean, democracy needs its gatekeepers, and it needs leaders in all parties who are willing to stand for principle and defend institutions of value. Think about what's, Trump is by far, he's the front runner of this party. And I think the leadership of the Republican Party has demonstrated a degree of cowardice in the face of these extremists and a kind of cravenness in its own quest for power. Now, of course, there are many good people who identify as Republican, but today's leaders and funders of the Christian nationalist movement have really created a base of voters who aren't going to go for that because it's become a very authoritarian movement. Some people use the F word. They say the word fascist, and that
Christo-fascist. We hear Christo-fascist a lot.
You do. I mean, I think, different words have different kinds of resonances for different audiences. But this extremist messaging that we've been hearing is a consequence of the movement's infrastructure building over decades.
Another caller, J.D. And J.D., you're on the air.
Yes, I think the Republicans and Christian nationalism have found each other as they need each other. Republicans cannot get votes. So Christian nationalism, they see this. So it's a win-win situation for them. The Republicans get the votes that they desperately need, and the Christian nationalists, they get the laws that they need passed to support their Christian nationalism.
All right, J.D., thank you for that. But I wonder if it's become, since the overturning of Roe and the abortion being, enforced around the country in Texas, and that's become an issue of that people are voting on, that it's become a lose-lose situation for the Republican Party, because do we see some, like even Trump, trying to walk back his position on abortion, and then we see some people who are these evangelicals, Christian right, who are now upset that they're doing that, and they're threatening to hold back. So it's become an issue that you can't win with and you can't win without.
They, listen, for many years, the movement knew very well if you can get people to vote on a single issue, you can control their vote. So they actually, you know, at the time Roe versus Wade passed, most Protestant Republicans supported it. But over time, they purged pro-choice voices from the Republican Party. It actually took a lot of effort. You know, Phyllis Schlafly's written a terrific book about that process, titled How the Republican Party Became Pro-Life. And it's a fascinating read if anyone's interested, because it shows that the pro-life religion that we see today is really a modern creation. It was created for political purposes. But the problem is most Americans, Republican and Democrat, support abortion rights in some form. And so these bans that we're seeing across the country, all these stories about women, you know, women being injured and being forced to carry pregnancies that they don't want, being, you know, the pro-life anti-abortion movement will lie and say, oh, they're aborting children after birth, which isn't a thing. In fact, you know, most, you know, people who can get abortions will get them as early as possible. But to have all of this taken away from us, I mean, it just, you're taking away people's most fundamental, I would say, you know, sense of bodily autonomy, their ability to control their lives, their futures, their ability to make the most intimate family decisions. So they've really overshot, and they're terrified. And frankly, they should be. Now, Trump is making some noises. Oh, I'm going to walk it back. Look at what he does, not what he says. He boasted about, he promised to appoint anti-abortion justices. He did that. And then he said, look what I did. And he speaks at, you know, March for Life rallies, which take place every year in Washington, D.C. And one that I went to, he said, you know, I gave you everything you wanted, and I think I gave you more. And I'm the guy who overturned Roe versus Wade. And that's going to continue. I mean, this movement might be trying to message differently because they're afraid of hemorrhaging votes, but they will continue pursuing this path and stripping, you know, women and families of their most fundamental rights.
So, but they're also moving towards contraception. They want to ban contraception. They say all sex should be open to life, to the creation of life. That's their wording. IVF, that's the, you know, they want to prohibit that because they think that life begins at conception, even though it doesn't. And it's, that's kind of a weird thing to talk about because it's hard to define the scientifically. But these are the positions that this group has adopted, and it is not you know, what the majority, the vast majority of Americans want. White evangelicals make up 14% of Americans. How do they have so much power?
Well, first of all, you are absolutely right about that. They are going after many of the most popular and effective forms of birth control. It's a movement that has said over and over, life begins at the moment of fertilization, which would ban many of the most popular and effective forms of birth control, which prohibit implantation, like birth control pills, IUDs, that would make IVF virtually impossible. But the reason the movement, yes, there are a minority of this country, they have disproportionate political power, because much of that infrastructure, the movement functions as a giant voter turnout machine. They know if you can get people to turn out in disproportionate numbers, you can punch above your political weight. And that's exactly what they have done over time. They really are very good at networking people, messaging to them, you know, sort of disinforming them and exploiting them through that sort of, I would say, propaganda machine. And then getting them to, you know, turn out to vote on those issues, and, you know, often on two or three issues. Now, you know, the abortion issue is a little tricky for them. So they're finding new issues. They tried with CRT, and then DEI, both of which are essentially a form of race baiting. They've tried, you know, promoting the myth that librarians and second grade teachers are teaching children pornography in public schools, which is a myth. So they're trying to find new issues that they can rally their voters around. But the power that they have really comes down to the vote. So, you know, I go to the way I do a lot of my research is I go to religious rights strategy gatherings and meetings and summits and conferences. And I go to, you know, churches that are part of these networks. And, you know, many of the speakers have said things like this election is about judges. You know, they know that it's, if you can get the judges, you can get the policies you want. Or they'll say, you know, you need to vote your biblical values. They often say this in the churches, and they'll hand out these voter guides that have clear yes or no answers on abortion, defense of marriage, you know, which is, you know, against same-sex marriage and things like that. So they'll boil it down to two or three key issues, and that's how they get their people out to vote.
All right, we're going to take another break. We'll come back. We're going to talk about the role of women in this movement, and in Christian nationalism, how women fit into that. But let's take a break. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you've got a question or a comment, please call in. I'd love to hear from you. If you think we're being unfair, I want to hear from you, please. Check us on that. That would be cool. 833-877-8255. The Source continues right after this.
This is Dan Katz, TPR's Vice President of News, here to say thank you if you've already donated to TPR's Spring Pledge Drive. While we've made progress towards our fundraising goal, we aren't there yet. And if you haven't made a contribution, please consider TPR's place in your life. Knowledge gained, understandings built, music that uplifts and inspires, and then help ensure we can continue providing the programming that you rely on. Donate today at tpr.org, or you can call 800-622-8977. And thanks.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Christian nationalists and how they have connected with America's favorite Bible and golden sneaker salesman, Donald Trump. Why have they worked so well together? And what does that mean for your freedoms in America moving forward? The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Catherine Stewart, you listen to the big shots who are in the this movement, and they'll tell you that women, they want to do away with divorce on demand. They want to have covenant marriages, which are supposed to be super marriages of some sort. How do women fit into this movement?
Well, it's a complicated question. I mean, this is a movement. There are some women in the movement, and some of them are very happy to trade away the rights of other women in order to earn a seat at the table in conservative politics. In a way, for a lot of them, you know, as I go to these conferences, I see that the route to power for some of the women in the movement is through the anti-abortion movement. If they can sort of prove their bona fides that way, then, okay, well, we can have a lady here because it reassures other women that we're not misogynist. But this is the loss of rights is really stark. I mean, there are people in the movement, I'm hearing it more and more, who are now talking about household voting, which is the idea that the so-called head of the household would have the right to cast the vote in that household, the head of the household being male. I mean, basically, one of the things that's so alarming about the loss of reproductive rights is let's just face the facts. We're seeing some really alarming trends in maternal health among particularly women of color. Our maternal mortality is incredibly high among nations in the developing world. It's rising sharply. Black women are three times as likely to die as white women who are already suffering from disparities in health care. But the loss of rights goes further. So here's here's the thing about taking away reproductive rights and birth control. You cannot take the reproductive rights away from women without taking away the rights of all women and girls, because you're marking out half of the population as being members of a subordinate group in society, a group whose bodies are, unlike men, you know, bodies of men, property of the state. And this has a knock-on effect in every aspect of society. It shows up in lower pay, wide-scale workplace discrimination, in media depictions of women as subordinate. It's basically creating women as a subclass of Americans, no control over the most fundamental freedoms. And this is what religious nationalist governments do around the world. I mean, it's not remotely unique to Christian nationalism. We see this show up in religious nationalist societies governed by other kinds of religion, where women's subordinate status is codified by law. It's basically a way of exerting social control, and in a way, it's a tool for imposing other forms of social control.
Well, do they see Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale book as a how-to? Is that what they really want?
You know, I don't think we need to examine. I mean, we don't need to look at Handmaid's Tale to see what we could get. I mean, there are plenty of examples already in the world, you know, of what we could end up with here. I mean, Handmaid's Tale is a terrific book. I actually like The Testaments even more. But, you know, we can look to theocracies around the world and ask ourselves, do we really want to live like that? I mean, very few of us would say that we actually do.
All right, let's go to a caller, Javier, Xavier. You're on the air.
Yes. Hey, I just had a question. It's a touching on Christianity a little bit on that. I found out about this about 2 years ago. It's the picture of the man depicted or portrayed, however you want to say, as Christ. The name of that man, I did a little homework and research myself about 2 years ago. The name of that man is Caesar Borgia, like Julius Caesar, Caesar Borgia. So I just wanted to ask here on the show, have you heard of that man portrayed as Christ, or have you heard of that first name, last name of him?
All right, Javier, thank you for that.
Thank you, Javier. This is new to me, but I'll have to look it up.
Well, let me ask you about Speaker Mike Johnson. He has been said it's the first time we've had a Christian nationalist speaker in the House of Representatives. He talks a lot about his faith. He says that he feels that he was appointed by God to be in this role. Is this a sign that there is this movement is growing in power?
You know, Johnson is a creature of the modern Christian nationalist movement. He built his career through organizations like the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is one of the largest religious right legal organizations. He's adopted the theocratic positions that are representative of this movement, his anti-abortion extremism, his election denialism, his climate denialism, his bogus misconception of religious liberty. These aren't just a laundry list of bad ideas. Look, these are part of the package of the Christian nationalist movement and its anti-democratic aims. So basically, you know, he has justified his power with dominionist and Christian nationalist claims. He said things like, I believe God raises up those in authority. So it's this idea that God put him in power. You know, it works hand in glove with this idea that God is putting Trump in power, of course, which a lot of his supporters say, but also this idea that God wants conservative Christians to dominate all the key levers of government and society. So, you know, yes, I think the answer is absolutely yes. Would an extremist like Mike Johnson then have put in that position 20 years ago when gatekeepers of the Republican Party still sought to keep extremism of this type sort of on the sidelines? You know, I don't think so. I think that we're really looking, the movement long preceded Donald Trump, but he has given it jet fuel.
Let's go to Chris on the phones. And Chris, you're on the air.
Thank you, guys. I just would like to remind everybody something, that the United States was never, ever meant to be a Christian country. It was always meant to be a country in which you could choose to be a Christian.
All right. Thank you for that, Chris. So when we hear that from people, and this is something they say all the time, as if it was a truism in the movement that this was a Christian nation. And how do they support that, Catherine?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that's such an important comment. Thank you so much for calling in. I mean, the constitutional principle of the separation of church and state, I just want to say, has the best piece of real estate in our Constitution. It's in the very first clause of our First Amendment, which is the Establishment Clause. But the way that they get around that, and I mean, look at our founders, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, James Madison, and many others were actually deists, or some of them shifted their opinions about religion over time, but essentially they wanted to represent the idea of government of, by, and for the people, not a government to serve any, like a pope or a kind of religious purpose. So the way the movement leaders get around this is there's this whole industry of these mythmakers, like people like David Barton.
Right, another Texan.
Another Texan, exactly, whose alternate sort of version of American history has been so egregious that, you know, one of his books was recalled by his publishing house, which is a Christian publisher, because they said it lacked fact. He's been found to make up quotes from the founders that never actually existed. But, you know, he's been discredited over and over and over by historians, many of them conservative Christian historians, but who are actual scholars. But these myths that he weaves are too valuable to the movement to discard just because they're not true. They need this myth of America being founded as a reactionary religious nation, because that gives them license to destroy democracy.
So in the minute we have left, do you see the reason why we have this drop-off in the number of people who are going to church on Sunday, that as there's this rise of Christian nationalism, this is actually bad for organized religion?
This is true. In many ways, the movement is turning a lot of people off of religion. But I would have to say that the movement, what it's doing is losing, you know, American religion is losing a lot of people in the moderate middle. And what you end up is leaving behind a kind of more radicalized core. But I do want to say that, you know, this is a movement that represents a minority of our population. Most Americans, religious and non-religious alike, really reject this agenda. And, you know, they only have power because they get out the vote and they get organized. And there are so many individuals and organizations trying to organize in opposition. And that, frankly, gives me hope. So,
George Carlin said he thought that religion was just a bureaucracy that got between him and the creator. So, you know, something else to think about there. Catherine Stewart, author of the book Power Worshippers: Inside the Dangerous Rise of Religious Nationalism. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us today on Passover.
Thank you so much.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our local and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's vice president.